Jack Burton always says at a time like this.
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
You're a bluebird. You're a brownie. You're a Girl Scout cookie.
He doesn't know how to use the three seashells.
I used to love Doggy Chow.
I used to love Doggy Chow, too.
Want a date? Going out? Looking for some action? Need some company?
This is a snakeskin jacket. For me, it's a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom.
It's not important, okay? You're not important. Get used to it.
Baby, you are gonna miss that plane.
Welcome to the Cinema Recall Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very, very special episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I'm your host, The Vern, and today's show is very special because we are doing an audio drama of George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. And joining me are a bunch of great actors and deadites, and I'm very thankful to have many people on this show. We are kind of splitting this episode up into two parts, and joining me for part one of our audio drama, in no special order, we have Mr. Matthew Stewart of the Simplistic Reviews podcast. Hello, Matthew.
Hey, well, top billing. First time in my life. I'll take it. I'll take it this time, Bert.
I love it. I always mess up the name of her website, but we have from Squeaky Speedster Mind, Jeanette Miller Mickenham. Hello, Jeanette.
Hey, you got it.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Woo!
From Lily's Lab, Lily Spellman. Hello.
Hi. Sorry about my voice. I'm in Johnny mode right now.
Oh, it's cool. Hey, no, love it, love it, love it. Yes. Big supporter of the Mutant Family and Last Drive-In, so thank you very much. And we have with us Donnie, and I forgot your last name. I feel so bad. But Donnie from Cases and Kisses. Right. Donnie, what's your last name?
I don't have one. I'm just Donnie.
Donnie, I love it. Okay, all right. Sorry, bud. All right. And we have with us, and I'm going to mess up on your last name too, Greg Carraro?
Oh, no, not even close. Greg Cafaro.
Cafaro. There's a C there, okay.
A for effort.
A for effort. And, gosh, I should add this back in here, but what's the name of your site, or do you...
Miscast Entertainment.
Oh, Miscast Entertainment, that's right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for being on this presentation with us. I hope you all enjoy... But before we begin, we are going to play some ads from some amazing podcast shows, so stay tuned.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Whatever.
Hey, this is Jason.
And this is Mary.
And we are the hosts of the comedy podcast Whatever with Jason Soto. It is a podcast unlike anything that's been done before.
Is that true?
Yes. Yes, it is.
What makes us so different?
Well, how many podcasts do you know talk about meat for 5 minutes? Or talk about R.E.M. songs. Or true crime.
Well.
Don't answer that last one.
Alright, I guess I see your point.
Plus, you get hilarious banter from us. Now tell us a podcast that does that.
I can only think of one. Whatever with Jason Soto. Found on Podomatic, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever podcasts can be found.
With so many podcasts out in the world, you have a plethora of options. Take a chance with Too Many Captains, a movie podcast. Mixing comedy with an academic look at film and Hollywood culture, this podcast is perfect for those looking for a fresh perspective. From deep dives into classic films, to debates on digital streaming versus physical media, and film discussions based on randomly chosen topics in our What Are We Talking About segments, there's something to satisfy all your movie podcast cravings. So if you're feeling lucky or feel the need for speed, grab your shaken martini or some fava beans and a nice Chianti and subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or Google Play. For more content, visit amoviepodcast.com. Find us on Instagram at Too Many Captains Productions and on Twitter at It's a Film Podcast. Too Many Captains, the jolliest bunch of podcasters this side of the nut house.
And now we do present to you Night of the Living Dead, written by George A. Romero and John Russo.
Say the time changes the first day of summer, then two good things would happen all at once. I love the long days and the extra sun.
Not a good the extra daylight does me. Lost an hour's sleep, it's dark already, we still have a 3-hour drive, and we won't go back till after midnight.
If it really dragged you that much, you wouldn't do it.
Are you kidding? I certainly don't want to blow my Sunday on this scene. We're either going to have to make Mother move to Parkville or move the grave to Pittsburgh.
Oh, you're just being silly. Mother can't make a drive like this.
Mother wants to remember, so we have to drive 400 miles to plant a cross on a grave as if he's staring up through the ground to check the decorations. We have to remember, and she stays at home.
Johnny, we're here. All right?
Hey. Hey, Barb, you know the radio's been on this whole time?
Ladies and gentlemen, please forgive... What? Hey, you got a signal, Charlie?
It must have been the station.
Do not be alarmed.
Hey, the radio's okay, it's just...
You remember which row it's in?
I think it's over here. Did you hear the radio?
Hmm?
The radio's fixed. Must have been the station, not the radio.
Good. You won't be as bitchy driving home.
Nobody is around.
Well, it is late. If you'd get up a little earlier...
I already lost an hour's sleep on the time change.
Oh, sometimes I think you complain just to hear yourself talk.
An hour earlier and it'd still be light. It's hard enough to find in the light.
There it is!
What happened to the one from last year? Every year, $25 for one of these things, and the one from last year's gone.
The flowers die, and the caretaker or somebody takes them away.
Yeah, a little spit and polish, and they can sell them again. Wonder how many times we've bought the same.
In the distance, a huddled figure is walking among the graves.
Come on, Barb. Church was this morning.
Barb continues her prayers. The huddled figure still moves silently among the graves.
Well, praying's for church.
I haven't seen you in church lately.
Well, Grandpa told me I was damned to hell. Remember? Right here. I jumped out at you behind that tree. Grandpa got all excited.
You'll be damned to hell!
Right here, I jumped out at you from behind that tree. She used to be so scared.
Johnny!
You're still afraid.
Stop it! I mean it!
They're gonna get you, Barbara.
Stop it. You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara. They're gonna get you.
Johnny, stop!
They're coming out of their graves. After you. They're coming to get you. To get you.
You're acting like an idiot.
Here comes one of them now.
He'll hear you.
Coming to get you.
The couple is now only a few feet from intersection with a path with the old figure.
I'm getting out of here.
He pulls out of the path. The old man lunges at the girl. His hand grabs at her hair. A plate gaps chokes her. She is coughing. The man grips her arm and slashes at her clothing. She flails about, choking, trying to yell.
Hey, God!
The man is all over Barbara, unable to hold her in her violent flailing. His grab and tears her jacket and scratches her face. He seems to be trying to bite her arm. John leaps at the man. The three fall to the ground. Barbara kicking, beating with a purse. John gets a firm hold on the man, and Barbara is able to wrench free. The man is thrashing wildly at all parts of John's body. He struggles to the feet. The figure thrashes, beats, tears like an animal. John clutches at him, and they fall in a heap. In the darkness, their form is as one dragon thing. Barbara screams wildly. The two men make animal sounds. One figure takes advantage and slams his fist down against the other's head. Barbara is pants-stricken. Her screams turn to a frenzy grasp as she finds a tree limb and snatches it up. But when she looks up, she sees that one has vanquished the other. She stops in tracks. The man is doing something with a limp body, still ripping at it.
Johnny!
He jumps into a half-standing position, like an animal perch to spring. Barbara stops in her track. The man is breathing heavily. She starts to back away. The man holds very still. She bats further, faster, full of fear. The man starts to move slowly. Cat-like, he steps over the body. Barbara drops the club and breaks into a dead run down the path. She screams. The man moves after her, but he is considerably slower. Barbara reaches the car, sobbing. She yanks open the door. She can hear the man draw near her. She stumbles into the front seat and slams the door shut. The man rips at the door handles and pounds flatly at the car. The girl starts screaming again. She summons enough presence of mind to reach for the emergency brake. The man pounds and falls out the window. The car at the top of a lawn grade slowly starts to drift. The man struggles to hold, loses his footing, and falls to the road. The man regains his footing and then starts after the car. She struggles with the door handle. The man draws nearer. She breaks from the car. The man keeps coming, desperately trying to move faster. Barbara runs off the roadway and onto the turf of the cemetery. Across a main highway is a darkened gasoline station, and beyond it, an old house. She breaks into a run across the highway. Some 50 yards away, there is an old house. She runs towards it. Barbara finds that she is in the kitchen of an old house. She comes through a door and into a large living room. No sign of life. She darts back to the kitchen, rummages through drawers in a kitchen cabinet, and finds the silverware. She chooses a large steak knife and, grasping it tightly, goes to listen at the door again. All is quiet. She goes back into the living room. Suddenly, there's a noise from outside. The pounding and rattling of a door. Barbara drops the curtain edge and stiffens. Across the lawn, the man is pounding at the door to the garage. She watches, her eyes wide with fear. The man struggles with the door, then looks about and picks up something and smashes it. In a panic, Barbara pulls away from the window. Across the room is a telephone. She rushes to it and picks up the receiver.
I'm sorry, our lines are busy. Would you hold the line, please? I'm sorry, our lines are busy.
She quickly depresses the receiver button, lets them up, and dials again.
I'm sorry, our lines are busy.
Barbara puts the phone down and rushes to another window. A figure is crossing the lawn, coming towards the house. She peels back a corner of the curtain and sees the back of the first attacker, not 10 feet away, facing the man who is approaching. The attacker moves towards the new man. Finally, the attacker moves back across the road in the direction of the cemetery. The other man approaches the house, sees the shadow of a tree, and stops. In an attitude of solid watching, Barbara stares, but can see little. Then suddenly, a distant sound, an approaching car. She scampers to the window and looks out. Barbara reaches for the doorknob, edges the door open very slightly. The light spills dimly over the area. There, under the great tree in the lawn, is the silhouette of the second man. Barbara shudders. She's afraid to make her break. The figure appears to be sitting, quite still. Its head and shoulders slumped over, it seems to be looking right at the house. Barbara just stares at the figure. She cannot run. She closes the door and backs into the shadows of the house. She spies the stairway. Frantic, she climbs, her hand raising the banister, still at her eye level, a brief glimpse of something on the floor there. She continues to climb the floor of the landing and sees the hand of a corpse. The corpse is almost skeletal with its flesh ripped from it. It lies at the end of a trail of blood, screaming absolute horror. Barbara almost falls down the stairs. She is gagging. She breaks for the door, unlocks it. Herself out into the night. Completely unmindful of consequences, she is bathed in light.
Are you one of them?
Behind him, the man of the tree still stands. Barbara is still frozen.
Are you one of them? I've seen him to look just like you.
The man at the tree moves forward. Barbara screams and steps back. Ben sees Barbara's wrist and pulls her into the house, slamming the door behind them. Ben locks the door and throws the bolt.
It's all right. It's all right now. Don't you mind the creep outside. I can handle him. There's probably going to be lots more of them as soon as they find out about us. I'm out of gas. The pumps over there are locked. Is there any food in here? I'll get us some grub. Then we beat them off and skedaddle.
Barbara just stares at him.
It ain't no good, no way. Might as well be two tin cans and a string. You live here?
She remains silent, looking toward the top of the stairs. The man follows her stare and starts toward the stairs. Halfway up, he sees the corpse and stops.
Oh, but Jesus.
We gotta bust out of here. Get to where there's some folks. Somebody with guns or something. I'll try to scare us up some grub.
What's happening?
Ben drops the groceries and seizes the jackhandle. He runs the front door and looks out through the curtain window. Another shattering sound. The first attacker has joined the second man at the old pickup truck. And with great stitch, the two are smashed out the headlights.
Two of them.
Once the headlights are battered out, the two hands outside start to beat at the body of the truck. Ben spins and lunges towards this girl.
How many?
What's happening?
How many? Come on. Now. I know you're scared, but I can handle those two bohoppers. How many more are out there? That truck is our only chance to get out of here. How many?
I don't know what's happening.
She breaks into a circle sobbing. Ben spins away from her and breaks for the door. She was out the window for a moment. The attacker still beat at the truck, wildly trying to tear it apart. Ben flint opens the door and leaps off of the porch. The two men look up. For the first time, we see the faces of the attackers. They are dead things. The flesh on their faces is rotten and oozing. Their eyes bulge from deep sockets. The hair is long, and their clothes rotten and in tatters. They are ghoulish beings, staring up at the truck driver, Ben. He starts for them slowly, with a building vengeance.
Come and get it. Come on, come and get some of this blood.
He breaks almost into one, but the two, rather than backing off, move towards the man, as though drawn by some urge. The man pounds into them, swinging and thrashing his arms and jackhandle. They are buffered by his blows. They seem weak compared to him, but his powerful blows don't really stop them. It's like being in a rut. He flips them back, and then stands again. It is a violent, brutal struggle, but the big man finally puts the two off the ground, and for a great while, continues to pound at their limb forms. He breaks into almost sobbing with each of his blows. He beats at them, and beats at them as the girl watches in shock from the porch. He slashes and beats until she starts to scream again. Her screams pierce the night. The man stops, breathing heavily. Barbara stands in the doorway. Ben turns to face her. He is out of breath. Suddenly, a noise behind the girl. She spins, and walking towards her from the kitchen is another of the hideous creatures. Ben leaps towards the thing.
Lock that door!
Barbara slams the door and locks it.
They know we're here now. There ain't no disputing that.
Barbara steps toward the thing. The fear in her face bears the beginning of a sick frown. Her hand comes up to her mouth. The urge to be ill, to scream, to run must all be fought. The glassy stare from the bulging eyes right back up at her. Suddenly, with a rustling sound, the thing moves. Ben has a hold on the thing's legs and is dragging it across the floor.
Shut your eyes, girl. I'm getting this dead bohopper out of here. You filthy.
With a swift move, the big man unbolts the door, fleeing it open. The ghost things begin to move towards him. With one great heave, the dead form is flopped outside the house. It lies across the threshold. The thing advances silently.
Filthy.
Another great effort shoves the body almost clear. Ben flops the body down over the edge of the porch. The three figures are close upon him. Are starting to reach out. The big man shudders. He fumbles into the breast pocket of his work shirt. The things advance. He produces a pack of matches. Manages to strike one and torches the burning tip to the clothing of the dead thing. And with an almost popping sound, the clothing catches fire. The things in the yard stop in the tracks. The fire breathes slowly. Standing, he tips the burning thing off the edge of the porch, watches it roll down the three small steps onto the grass, where it lies still, the flames licking around it. The three beings step back steadily. The big man cleans the banister around the little porch, his fist clenched, and his face is fiery in the glow of the flames. His voice quivers.
I'll get you. I'll get you. All of you. All of you.
The big man, in great strides, re-enters the kitchen and slams the door. He rushes to the cabinets and throws them open. Begins rummaging through them, standard kitchen utensils and supplies.
See if you can find the light switch.
Barbara falls back against the wall, and her hand gropes to a switch. The man flings open the door and spills contents over the shelving onto the floor. He reaches through it, pulls out a large knife, and sucking his breath in, stuffs it under his belt. Then he reaches into the drawer again and produces another knife. Taking Barbara by surprise, he strides towards her.
Now, you hang on to this.
She hesitates, but she takes the knife.
All right.
He pulls away from her and continues to rummage as Barbara looks at the knife. As new cabinets and drawers fail to turn up what he's looking for, he grows impatient. Immediately, as the door is flung open with a clatter, the big man sees what he needs.
Tell me you ain't the sweetest thing.
His big hand comes out of the drawer with an old pipe tobacco tin, and in one gesture, he spills its contents onto a shelf, nails and screws and washers and tacks spill out onto the wind shelf. His fingers scoop them up.
See if there's any wood around the fireplace out there. Look, you... You're scared. I'm scared. I'm scared too, just like you. Now, we ain't gonna be worth a plug nickel if we don't do something. I'm gonna board up these doors and windows, but you gotta pitch in. You gotta help otherwise, cause there ain't nobody around to help us. And we're gonna be all right, okay? Now, I want you to scamper out there and see if there's any wood in that fireplace. Okay? Okay.
Barbara leaves the room and he continues his search. She moves quickly into the living room area. From the kitchen comes the tiring sound of the man's search. Barbara shudders. Still clutching her knife, she bends over the pile and gathers up the plankton. She stands with her awkward load, and the forbidden room faces her again, stopping her. She bolts and hurries towards the kitchen. Busting through the door, she finds the big man pounding with his jackhammer at the hinges of a tall broom closet door. One foul swipe and a great yank frees the wooden door, and the man stands it against the wall next to the broom closet. In the recesses of the closet, the man spots other useful items and pulls them out. An iron board and some old scrap lumber. Pulling several nails from his pocket, he places them and drives them in with the jackhammer.
There, by God. This ought to hamper their crimper. They ain't that strong. There. They ain't coming through that. I'll leave that for now. We'll fix the rest. Well, this place is fairly secure. Now, if we have to, we just run in here, no dragon now, or fussing with your makeup, or I leave you out there. We run in here and board up this door. You take these.
This time, Barbara reacts quickly and takes the little tobacco tin from his big hand. As she does so, the man gathers as much of the lumber as he can into his arms and starts out of the room. Barbara follows. They are in the living room.
It ain't gonna be too long. They'll be trying to hammer their way in here. They're afraid now.
He drops his load of wood in the middle of the floor and walks over to the largest front window.
They're scared of fire too. I found that out. There must have been 50, 100 of them down by Cambria when the news broke.
The man reaches the table, then hoists one end and turns it onto its side. With a great ripping sound, the table leg is torn off, and the man drops it onto the rug.
I've seen this big gasoline truck, you know, down Beekman's Diner, and I hadn't heard of the radio. I got a radio on my truck. This gasoline truck comes screaming out of the diner, a lot out in the road. Must be 10, 15 of them things chasing it. It looked funny to me, but I don't see the things running behind it right away. I just see this big truck, and it looks funny. You know how slow trucks will start. And it's pulling out onto the road and weaving. Then I see those things, and this truck's moving so slow. They're catching up and grabbing, jumping on. And that truck just right across the road, through the guardrail. You know, I'm starting to throw on my brakes, and the truck smashes into the big sign and into the pumps, into the Esso station down there. I hear the crash, and that big thing starts burning. And it's still moving right through the pump stand and onto it and into the station. And I'm stuck still, and I see them things, and they all starting to back off. Some of them running. Or at least it looks like they're running. But they move kind of like they're crippled. But they keep backing off. And it's like they gotta get away from the fires. And the guy driving the truck can't get out somehow. He got the cab of his truck plowed halfway into the wall of the station. That thing's frying him in there, and he's screaming. Screaming like hell.
The man swats the last leg from the table, and the tabletop starts to drop.
I don't know what's gonna happen, you know? I mean, I don't know what the whole place gonna explode or fly to pieces, or what's gonna happen. I start driving for the gas station, and the cat in the truck is screaming and screaming. And after a while, he just stops. And there's them things standing back across the road. Standing, looking like they just come back from the grave or something. And they're over by the diner, and there's cars and buses in the diner lot, and lots of windows is smashed, and it's for sure them things done the people in the diner in. And more is outside and all over the place, just biding their time for a chance to move in. So I start my truck up, and I barrel right out some of them things. I'm steaming down right on them. And I get to good look at them. I see them for the first time in my lights, and then I just run right down on them. I just grind down hard as I can. And I knock a couple of them about 15 feet, flailing into the air. And I just want to smash them, crush them filthy things. And they're just standing there. They ain't running. They ain't even trying to get out of the road. Some of them even reaching out as if they're gonna grab me. But they're just standing there. And the truck is running them down like they were bugs or something. I'm...
Who are they?
You ain't heard nothing? You mean you ain't got no idea about what's going on here?
No. I can't. What's happening to us? Why? What's happening? Tell me. We were in the cemetery. Me and Johnny. My brother Johnny. We brought flowers for this man. Came after me and Johnny, and he fought, and now he's... Oh.
All right.
We've got to help him. We gotta go get Johnny. We've got to go out and find him and bring him here. We'll be safe. We can help him.
Ben steps towards her. She bats away, holding one hand towards him defensively and the other toward her mouth.
No, please. We've got to.
Now you gotta calm down. You're safe here. Now we can't take no chances.
We've gotta get Johnny.
Now, come on now. Settle down. You don't know what these things are. It ain't like no Sunday school out there.
Please, no.
Barbara is stopping finally. Her words become screams. She hits him again and again with brute force. He shoves her backwards, propelling her into a soft chair. She's up again, screaming and slapping at his face. He is forced to grab her again and practically slams her into a corner. He brings up one powerful fist and punches the girl. She falls limp against him. He does not carry, but almost walks her to the sofa, permits her dead weight to fold onto it, and eases her head onto a cushion. Next to the couch is a cabinet radio. The man stabs at a button.
Emergency radio network. Normal broadcast facilities have been temporarily discontinued. Stay tuned to this wavelength for emergency information. Your law enforcement agencies urge you to remain in your homes. Keep all doors and windows locked and boarded shut. Use all food, water, and medical supplies sparingly. Civil defense forces are attempting to gain control of the situation. Stay near your radio and remain tuned to this frequency. Do not use your automobile. Remain in your homes. Keep all doors locked and windows locked as well. Our live broadcasters will convey information as received from Civil Defense Headquarters. This is your Civil Defense Emergency Radio Network. Normal broadcast facilities have been temporarily discontinued. Stay tuned to this wavelength.
From across the road, a figure is moving towards the house. And the little stand near the couch where Barbara lies unconscious, there are old magazines. Ben grabs them, rips pages loose, and crumbles them into the fireplace. The larger logs begin to burn. He returns to the window. The new figure is just reaching the place where the other stands silently. The big man rushes to the fire, where the biggest logs have now begun to blaze. Then, a torch in each hand, he nudges a big padded armchair ahead of him. With a charcoal light, he drenches the padded armchair and touches it with a torch. It catches instantly, and it flames, lit, and climb, casting flickering light through the house. He lunges for the door, bolts it, and flinging it wide open. The figures step back slightly. The man shoves the chair through the doorway, and the flaming bolt tumbles down the steps onto the front lawn. Inside the front house, the front door being shut, and the man fastens the bolt. He hurries again to the window and puts more nails in the tabletop, fastened it securely. Ben boards up the two side windows, and then moves to the front door. He drives nails through the board into the molding and tests the barricade for strength. He's about to start hammering when an idea strikes him. He opens the door again and enters the room. There are chairs, a desk, a bureau. He steps to the desk and starts to rummage through the doors. As he pulls away, something catches his eye. He reaches eagerly and his hand finds what he had hoped for. A rifle and a box of ammunition.
We're all right now. This place is good and solid. And I found us a gun and some bullets. So we got us a radio, and sooner or later, somebody will come and get us out of here. We got food in there. Oh, and I got you some shoes. We'll see in a minute if they're fit.
Other than her upright position, Barbara shows no signs of life. Her wide eyes just stare through the floor at some point beyond. He can't smile, and with the girl not looking at him, his attempt is half-hearted. He takes up the rifle, the cigar box, a coat and her shoes in one clumsy armful. The man kneels with his bundle in front of the girl and then drops the armful of materials at her feet. He holds the shoes that he found in the closet.
Now let's see how big your feet are.
Looking up at her, but he is unable to cope with her catatonia, her stillness makes him as gentle as he can be.
Come on.
He holds one of the shoes near her foot, waiting for her to lift her leg and slip into the shoe. She is still. Finally, the man takes one of her ankles and fumbles to put the shoe on her foot. It does not go on easily, partly because it is too small, but mostly because of her limpness. But he gets it on and sets her foot down and takes up the other one. He succeeds in getting the second shoe on and leans back on his haunches, looking up at her. She is staring at her feet.
Well, that's a real Cinderella story, ain't it?
The man reaches in reflex for his jacket pocket, but he has given Barbara his jacket.
Hey, you know you got my cigarettes?
He reaches towards her, and his hand enters the pocket of the jacket he has draped over his shoulders.
You got my cigarettes? Okay, now, maybe you ought to lie down. Now, the upstairs is the only other way something can get in here, so I'm gonna go up and fix that.
He snaps a clip after the last shell, and is about to stand when his glance falls on the girl again as he tries to get through one last time. The man stands, tucks the rifle under his arms, grabs as much lumber as he can carry, and starts for the stairs. Barbara looks up at him, and he is aware of it, but he keeps moving, and her stare falls.
I'm gonna be right here. You're all right now. I'm right here, upstairs.
He starts up the stairs. At the top of the landing, he is confronted once again with a body that lies there, torn and defaced. He sets down his supplies, and the sight of the corpse is repulsive, and he tries not to look at it. Downstairs, Barbara still stays on the couch. The fire flickers on her face, and the burning wood pops loudly now and again. Objects in the room are silhouetted, and the atmosphere is stark.
That have appeared in most parts of the nation seem to have certain predictable patterns of behavior. In the few hours following initial reports of violence and death, and apparently deranged attacks on the lives of people taken completely off guard, it has been established that the alien beings are human in many physical and behavioral aspects. Hypotheses as to their origin and their aims have to this point been so varied and so diverse that we must only report these factors to be unknown. Teams of scientists and physicians presently have the corpses of several of the aggressors, and the corpses are being studied for clues that might negate or confirm existing theories. The most overwhelming fact is that these beings are infiltrating through urban and rural areas throughout the nation in forces of varying number, and that they have not as yet evidenced themselves in the area. Please take every available precaution. Attack may come at any time, in any place, without warning. Repeating the important facts from our previous reports, there is an aggressive force, army, of unexplained, unidentified humanoid beings that have appeared in worldwide proportions. And these beings are totally aggressive, irrational in their violence. Civil defense efforts are underway, and investigations as to their origin and purpose of the aggressors are being conducted. All citizens are urged to take utmost precautionary measure to defend against the insidious alien force. These beings are weak in physical strength, are easily distinguishable from humans by their deformed appearance. They are usually unarmed, but appear capable of handling weapons. They have appeared, not led an organized army, not with any apparent reason or plan. Indeed, they seem to be driven with the urges of entranced or obsessed minds. They appear totally unthinking. They can, I repeat, they can be stopped by immobilization. That is, by blinding or dismembering. They are, on the average, weaker in strength than an adult human, but their strength is in numbers, in surprise, and in the sheer fact that they are beyond our normal realm of understanding. They appear to be irrational, non-communicative beings, and they are definitely to be considered our enemies in what we must call a... Shit.
That was good. Okay. So, that is going to end part one of our Nate of the Living Dead audio play. Big shout and thank you to all the casters. That was an amazing job, all right?
That was pretty good.
Good job. Good job.
Great, guys. Excellent.
Shout
job.
Here to, of course, Lily Spellman, to Jeanette and Billy Mickenham, to Greg Cafaro, Toronto.
Yeah, good enough. Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Big Greg C.
Great C. Big Greg C. Hey. Matthew Stewart. Yeah. Thank you, Donnie, as well. Thank you so much.
No, so, thank you.
Yeah.
That was amazing. It's a lot of our first time doing stuff like this, and I'm so happy and enthusiastic and joyful that I got all these great, wonderful cast of great cats to do this. We actually do an audio play of cats, all right? But
which version?
I know, right?
I'm ready.
Okay, see, all right, love it.
Already, there you go.
Oh, but thank you all for listening very much. We'll be back in a few weeks for part two of Nate of the Living Dead audio play. Thank you so much for listening. If you like Cinema Recall, please follow us on the social medias. We're available on Twitter at @cinema_recall. Check out our website, cinemarecall.net. On our webpage, I will post links to all these wonderful people and their websites on there as well. So go check that out. Be sure to follow them on social media, which I will post links to the sites because these cats are amazing people. So thank you all for listening to part one. And like I said before, we got more for you. We'll be back with part two in a few weeks.